You're listening to Bet the Board podcast here on Monday, October 6th. The gentleman you're about to hear, he of Payne Insider and PayneInsider.com. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. And Payne, before we get into the Monday night game, which we will do towards the end of this, let's talk about the weekend it was in the National Football League. Anything major really jump off the page at you for the games recently completed?
Another primetime over, Sunday night, Thursday night. You know, that just is
10 a trend. Ten straight we've seen in the primetime slot, cashing tickets for all those fantasy freaks out there.
Yeah, 10 straight, 13-2 overall to the over this season in the primetime spots, Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night. It'll be interesting to see if that trend continues with tonight's game, but we'll get to that later on. A couple teams that, for me, were pretty impressive were the Giants. Once again, second half performance was great. The offense really looks like it's getting going. Eli Manning looks very comfortable. And this is, I think, a perfect system for Eli. I was a little wrong earlier in the season, but now that he's getting acclimated to the system, this is a guy who's got happy feet, doesn't like to get hit. So this new spread it out, quick hitting offense, I think, is going to probably extend his career, you know, a few more years than what they would have done playing in the old system. So the Giants, again, pretty impressive. It looks like they're getting some money already for next week. So that was one of the teams that impressed me. One of the teams that disappointed, obviously, the Jets, just giving up. That's blatantly what I saw, just gave up. So that's a team it'll be interesting to see. But my guess is when everyone gets off the bandwagon, they'll probably be a decent team to look at this week.
All right, before we get into the Jets game against Denver, which is going to be a fascinating discussion in and of itself, what do we make of the Jets at this current juncture? I mean, look-ahead line for Denver was -6. They go out west to San Diego, lay an absolute egg. Number balloons out to 7.5. I mean, how do you even go about trying to approach this team knowing the kind of turmoil they're in, given the fact that Geno Smith can't even check the clock to make a meeting the night before the game?
It's tough. I kind of looked at this game last week, and I said this will take a similar approach to the Dolphins the week prior. There was a lot of internal stuff going on, and kind of the best resolution to that was getting the heck out of town and getting out of the country. Obviously, this wasn't getting out of the country, but New York to San Diego, you would think, get away from some of that New York media. Unfortunately, it looked like once they got down 7-0, they just absolutely quit. The defensive line looked like it quit. Going into that game, you had a San Diego team less than 2.5 yards per attempt on the ground all season. The Jets' defensive line very stout, and they couldn't even do something they were good at. Lack of weapons. Geno Smith, you nailed it, misses the team meeting after calling a players-only meeting earlier in the week. So he seems to be a mess. It's just a tough, tough time right now for the Jets. Rex Ryan, great defensive mind, great defensive coordinator, but it looks like he's letting that team and all the players run amok right now. It's a tough spot, tough situation going on there in New York.
Yeah, and we talk all the time in this business. Sometimes the hardest bets to make in the NFL on a week-to-week basis are actually the ones that cash. Unfortunately, there are going to be duds that come to fruition, like the New York Jets, for yet another time this season. Hey, I openly admit I was on them +7, wrote that ticket off for dead, and went about enjoying my Sunday afternoon midway through the first quarter. A couple of other teams, though, that had some interesting results, and was curious to get your thoughts. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys, finding a way to win in an obvious flat spot against the Houston Texans, albeit they didn't cover, and there was sharp money that came in on the Texans that drove the price from 6.5 all the way down to 4 before kickoff. But when we look at Dallas, knowing that they have Seattle on deck, how do we approach the Cowboys moving forward? Do we think they're going to be overvalued in the betting market, or is this team really as good as they're playing right now?
It's really a tough call for me because I like the Texans, and really the Texans snuck in there, probably a game they shouldn't have covered. As much as Dallas sleptwalked through that game, especially early on, they still led at halftime. They were still leading late in that game, covering the number late in that game. Now, obviously, I don't think it's a good spot traveling to Seattle next week. I don't think they're in that class quite yet. But this seems like a team that's headed in the right direction. Now, when you look at their schedule, it's a tough schedule. The two easiest games on the slate are a trip to Jacksonville and a home game against Washington. But other than that, the schedule is extremely tough. And then you're just waiting for that ticking time bomb on DeMarco Murray. Is he going to get injured? Is he going to finally play a full 17? He's averaging 26 carries a game. Can you continue to do that? So that'll be the big key for Dallas. Will the defense finally turn into what we thought they were and being a not a very good unit? So those are all question marks for the Dallas Cowboys still moving forward.
Question marks on two teams that played one of the more, I don't know if I want to call it interesting or intriguing, but the final score definitely was. Buffalo goes on the road to Detroit, wins 17-14. Kyle Orton, 300-plus passing yards in relief of A.J. Manuel, getting the starting nod, obviously, going into the game. Of course, the storyline here, Alex Henry missed what felt like 47 field goals for the Lions. You know, how do we approach Detroit moving forward and Buffalo, knowing that the Bills have one of their biggest games of the season coming up with a chance to pull dead even with the Patriots in the AFC East?
I was very happy with what I saw from Buffalo. It was what I would call a professional effort on the road. You got Kyle Orton, obviously not acclimated to everything quite at this time, isn't really in tune with his receivers yet. The pick six, in my mind, not totally on Orton. It looked like Watkins cut the route off, and that'll obviously improve over time as they get a little better chemistry with each other. But you go onto the road, a tough spot. Something your offense does well is run the ball, and that's kind of what the Lions do, is stop the run. And Orton just willed them to a win. I know Henry missed a few field goals, but Buffalo missed a field goal, clanked a 49-yarder. So I thought they were good. At a spot in that game, there was a big juncture. There was a defensive holding penalty on Sammy Watkins, which got overturned. I thought at that point Buffalo could have collapsed. It was a bad call, but they didn't. They kept willing forward, and it's just a tough workman-like team. And I think Orton, from the looks of things, might be the best, you know, quarterback for them moving forward. This is an AFC East that is just wide open, and that's why they made the move to Orton. I think it'll be a decent move.
All right, from this positive stuff on Buffalo, I want to go one more negative before we close with a positive for this fine segment of the podcast. The Jacksonville Jaguars, now sitting at 0-5 on the year. They've yet to cover a number. Their defense showed up for the first time all season, holding Pittsburgh to 17 points. Unfortunately, the Jags couldn't find a way to get into the end zone. Jacksonville at this point, I don't want to say any team is unbettable. We know what can happen. We wrote Jacksonville off last year, and they were actually one of the best teams against the spread over the last half of the season. But how do you even go about approaching Jacksonville right now? Do we wait for odds makers to make an adjustment? Do we just steer clear of their games? Or what does someone in your spot do when you're looking at the Jags, you know, moving forward at this particular juncture of the season?
For me, it's really tough because I've done a decent job this year incorporating numbers, incorporating math more into what it is that I do. And when we saw the Jaguars last week, there was still professional money coming in early in the week on the Jaguars. Took the 7. It never went back. It closed 5.5 at some of the sharper shops. But you had new sharp guys that I talked to that were laying it with Pittsburgh, laying the 6, laying the 5.5. And it was a game that was played right around the number. I don't know who was wrong or who was right. It was too tight for me to get involved. But we saw professionals on both sides of that game. And for me, that's exactly what the books want, 50-50 split action. Now, I know they didn't get that completely with the public on Pittsburgh also, but until the professionals, till there's some groups that aren't willing to back Jacksonville, we're not going to see the inflated prices that I think we should see on Jacksonville. And for that, I'm going to continue to be on the sidelines in a lot of their games.
Yeah, I think that probably makes the most sense, a wait-and-see type approach for a Jags team that I know a lot of us thought could turn the corner and at least be competitive. Hasn't quite been the case in the point spread covering category. Now, for a team who did bounce back, though, and showed some of their championship pedigree, you have to tip your hat to the New England Patriots, who, despite being bet from pick'em all the way out to a 3-point dog right before kickoff, dominated Cincinnati from start to finish en route to a 43-17 win. Now, I don't think the Patriots are as good as this performance showed, nor do I think they were as bad as they showed against Kansas City. Where do we see water meet its level for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady?
Well, I think, you know, when you get called out all week long, in a Hall of Fame quarterback like Tom Brady continues to get called out as being over the hill, you're going to see efforts like that. Sportsbooks made out very well. I still think this is a team long-term that is limited, and when you talk about things in the AFC East, there are teams that have caught up to them. I think they're tough matchups for them within that division. Inevitably, I think they squeak out the division, but at some point, I think the rubber meets the road, as you said, just not enough weapons. The one interesting weapon that we'll look to see if it continues moving forward is Tim Wright, the acquisition from the Buccaneers. I know a lot of people were like, who's Tim Wright, when they made that trade, but it looks like last night he got acclimated into the system. And this is a guy that had over 50 catches for a Buccaneers team last season, and I think that'll be kind of a key cog moving forward to their offense, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing you have to be optimistic about if you're a Patriots fan is Rob Gronkowski looked a lot healthier last night than he has at any point over the last season and a half, trying to run some of the routes. And that's probably as much attributed to Cincinnati not being in the right position. That defense clearly missed the services of their defensive signal caller, Vontaze Burfict, who missed the game with a concussion. But transitioning away kind of pain from what we learned, and just to kind of reset for those listeners out there, the gentleman on the other end of the line, he of Pain Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at just such a handle, at Pain Insider, or see a lot of his work at paininsider.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman, or toddstake.com with some other good football nuggets. And as we get into basketball and hockey season, we'll be sure to cover that. Pain, you look at some of these look-ahead lines and what we saw projected for the upcoming Week 6. Now, the fascinating part about it, we saw some unorthodox scores, but yet oddsmakers don't really seem like they've had to adjust a whole lot here. Denver goes from 6 to 7.5. As I'm looking at my screen now, I see some 9 starting to pop. How high will this number climb to try and attract some money on the New York Jets in this particular spot?
I don't think we get to 10. I don't. I think we'll see this land in no man's land. We'll be in that dead zone anywhere from 8, 8.5, 9. So that's where I think this will kind of go. I don't think it'll reach 10. That number will be probably ridiculous, and you'll see, you know, bettors coming in on the home dog at 10 points. I don't think this obviously gets 2-7 or below 7. It's the 1 o'clock slate, so there are other games, so we're not going to see too much of a move. I think we're right in that land where we're looking at Chris at 8 right now. And I'm sure there'll be some professionals that are looking to take the Jets, as crazy as that'll sound to some of our listeners.
It's going to be incredible to try and watch this team attract money in the betting marketplace, given some of the results we've seen so far this season. I guess one of the other games that kind of jumps off at me, and interested to get your thoughts, how do you, when you look at Philadelphia, again, they find a way to get 2 non-offensive touchdowns, weren't able to cover against St. Louis. If you took the Rams on the opening number, of course, if you waited that thing out, you could have laid 3.5 with Philly and got into the window. But what seems to be wrong with the Eagles' offense right now, whether it's Nick Foles, who we talked about at great length last week, but again, 352 total yards of offense, red zone inefficiency, and yes, the Rams did need the back door, but I'll contend they were the right side, especially if Philly doesn't get those 2 non-offensive touchdowns.
Yeah, the offense really struggling right now. Obviously, the key concern there is the offensive line, McCoy not being able to get going. Foles, we know, isn't that guy. But when you're able to run the ball and he's able to take those deep shots down the field, which he is very good at, the offense becomes a little more dynamic. Sproles has come in. He's done some things. He helps him out. But right now, the offensive line is a train wreck. That's where the problems are lying. It's not allowing him to run the ball. It's making the play-action deep shots that they typically take down the field that Foles loves to be less effective, and that's really where the issue is. And when you look at this the last couple games, you're talking about really just 2 touchdowns that were key offensive drives. So a lot of concern there, and we've seen this in the market right now. As good as the Giants have looked, this on the look-ahead line is a game that opened Philadelphia -3. You're already below the 3. You're looking at 2.5 pretty much across the board.
Yeah, I have to imagine you're going to see some more money coming on the Giants. Giants, a team, as you mentioned early in the podcast, that continue to look better and better offensively. They get their very talented, highly touted rookie into the mix this week with 4 catches for Beckham. So it'll be interesting to see how that offense continues to move forward. The last thing I want to leave with when we talk about the crystal ball before we get into tonight's Monday night game between the Redskins and Seahawks, when you're looking at the betting board now, any numbers you think are really beyond the move, sides or totals that we should encourage our listeners to jump on, you know, make sure they can get out ahead of the market this week?
I don't think they'll like hearing me say the 2 sides that I think will move, but I think Miami will definitely close 3, and I wouldn't be totally shocked to see that go below the 3. That's just my personal opinion there. Obviously, I know Green Bay looked like $1 million on Thursday night, but you get a Miami team off a bye, is bad, and I shouldn't say as bad, but Philbin's not really the tactical genius, but this is an offense that he knows. So I think Miami will definitely know what's coming. There'll be some things there, and I don't think this is going to – I think the 3.5 will completely disappear. Wouldn't be totally shocked to see this go under the 3. And the good old plug your nose and play would be the Oakland Raiders. This is a team, to me, off the bye week, insert Sperano. I've seen him. This is a – although he's not, again, not a great X's and O's guys, he gets his guys to play for him. They'll play a physical brand. And for me, one thing that I want to look at here is if it's not Carr, I'm definitely going to be in on Oakland if it's McGloin. So that's something I'll keep monitoring. And I don't know when the perfect time is to go on this game. I think if you miss 7, which will happen at some point during the week, we saw just last week this 4 o'clock slate with just 3 games, Chasers, guys looking to double up will be all over San Diego, and you might be able to get that 7 again, even, you know, closer to kickoff.
Yeah, it should be an interesting game as you talk about Oakland coming off of the bye week. Will be fascinating to see, given how some of the teams that we saw this week, aside from the Denver Broncos, really struggled to get rhythm early in their games with that extended layoff. The one total I think that'll be on the move, take a look at San Francisco and St. Louis sitting at 43.5. Would not be shocked to see that number close closer to 42. We've really seen a resurgence of San Francisco's defense over the last couple games, albeit at home, and a commitment to the ground game, trying to simplify that offense for Colin Kaepernick and get back on track with Coach Harbaugh and company. Now we focus our attention, though, Payne, on the game at hand tonight, which I think is fascinating when you see the dichotomy between the professionals and recreational bettors going toe-to-toe in the betting market, the line moves we've seen, and the reverse correlation, if you want to call it that, between side and total. As we sit here recording it right now, let's call Seattle what they are, a soft 7-point favorite at some of the sharper books offshore. Totals moved down from 46 to 45.5. I'm going to let you take this as a blank canvas and try and run with it, and we'll pick it apart from there.
Well, this is just a really tough game for me. I think it's one of the more interesting games of the week. And when you really try to break this down, I know we're going to see professionals and sports books. They're going to be on Washington. They're going to need Washington. These are the type of primetime games that literally your town, Las Vegas, was built on. They need these primetime decisions. They need these big money decisions. And we've been so ingrained on taking Washington. But when you step back and kind of look at things, my math numbers that I get sent to me, this is a game that probably should be 7.5, and we've made it as high as even 9.5 sometimes in some spots. But it's really tough with Seattle off the bye week to just blanket take Washington here. I think when a lot of people look at this game, we have seen some sharp money, dog and under, and I'm not quite sure how that's correlated. I think a lot of people will look at Washington and say, hey, this is, you know, look at their numbers and say, this is a good defensive team. But when you really dig into that, who have they played? Fitzpatrick, Foles, and that Philadelphia team we just talked about that are having issues on the offensive line, and Chad Henne. When you look at Washington, 10 sacks against Henne, just won their other three games. So they're going to need to apply pressure. And I think this is a tough, tough game to gauge overall. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are and potentially guide me into something that I'm not seeing here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to try and force anyone's hands here. I mean, I look at this game, and I think it's a question of motivation from both sides. You talk about Seattle coming off of the bye week, which changes the dynamic a little bit. In the ideal spot, you'd hope that Washington caught Seattle, and obviously not on a short week playing on Monday night, but coming off of that Denver game without time to refocus. Seattle, of course, I don't think you're going to call it a look-ahead game, but maybe that factors into the equation, knowing that they have Dallas coming into their building a week from now. We saw these two teams a couple years ago in the postseason, and Seattle went in there and took care of business after RG3 left the game. I'm as surprised as you are when you look at this total move from 46 down to 45.5, especially knowing there's money coming in on the Redskins, because I don't think the Redskins are going to be able to put together 10 to 12 play drives, running the ball, moving the chains on 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4, something that we talked about at great length before even coming on the podcast. And you want to talk about a curious move. As we record this Monday afternoon, we saw about 20 minutes ago, would you say, you saw one of the sharpest offshore books go from 7 to 6.5, and that number at 6.5 lasted, what would you say, about 5 minutes, 6 minutes tops?
Yo, at the very most, at the very most. Chris went down to 6.5, and I would say within 2 or 3 minutes, you're right there back at 7. So clearly professionals are on Washington. They're on the under, and again, I don't know how that's correlated. For me, slight lean to the over. I think when a lot of people talk Seattle, you'll hear blanket statements like this team isn't as good on the road. And offensively, there couldn't be anything further from reality. They're just as good on the road. The one thing that takes a step back is their defense a little bit when they don't have the 12th man in their corner. When you're talking about the Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll era, 2012-2013, and so far this season, it's a team that at home just surrenders less than 14 points, on the road almost 18. So you see about a 4-point adjustment to their defense. And that's one thing, and I know a lot of people like Seattle. They've been able to bet them blind throughout the course of this Russell, Pete Carroll era. You're talking about this team right now, just an absolute ATS machine, 13-7 on the road, 15-5 at home with Carroll and Wilson. So I can see why people want to go towards Seattle. But just for me in this spot, everything that I've been taught, everything that's been ingrained in me, Washington is the side. But as soon as Kirk Cousins start turning over the ball, this game could really snowball. So They're going to need Kirk Cousins to hold on to the ball, try to establish somewhat of a run game, but I don't think we'll see that under Gruden. And that's one thing that, again, leads me to the over. When you look at Gruden, this guy just wants to chuck the ball. Even in a game that they let in, that were they were close in against Philadelphia, they still passed the ball more than they ran.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's not exactly going out on a limb. You can call me Captain Obvious, what have you. Obviously, Washington needs a quick start. They can't get behind the eight ball here and be forced to one-dimensional, trying to throw against the Seattle defense. Of course, as we say this right now, we watch one of the bigger offshore books go from 7 flat down to 7, you know, lay 15 if you want to take the dog. Meanwhile, two of the recreational books here in Vegas at the exact same time go from 7 to 7.5. So, again, this is a game that, as you alluded to earlier, sportsbooks will need one side knowing how much money line, parlay action, teaser, and everything else liability is tied into Seattle. They'd love nothing better than an outright Washington win, especially given how yesterday went when you really only had one dog that the house needed come through to blow up a lot of those particular spots in Buffalo. New England did help later that evening. But again, one of the tougher games, and you talk about some of the handicapping trends and variables and intangibles we've been taught. You get 7 points on national TV with a team that was embarrassed in their building, you know, about 10 days ago. You're going to get a max effort. The real $100 million question is, the max effort from Washington good enough to match what the Seattle Seahawks will throw at them?
Yeah, that's the big question. And when you look at this, you also get the 1-3 mark. So this is likely their season. I don't think you can fall to 1-4. I know a lot of things that we have seen that a lot of professionals are gravitating towards. It looks like Washington is getting healthy at the right time. It looks like they'll get Niles Paul back, and it looks like they'll get Jason Hatcher and Jarvis Jenkins. A lot of those guys will be back tonight, which should help. So that's the key. Jordan Reed looks like he'll be out again, but they do get a lot of pieces back, and they're going to need to bring their defense, specifically on third down. One thing that I talked to a couple guys in Washington was they're not really sure why Washington isn't blitzing more, considering how bad the secondary's been. So that'll be interesting to see if they start to put a little pressure on Seattle tonight, and I think that'll be your best bet, is if they're able to put some pressure on them, alleviate some of the secondary concerns, Washington might give us a game effort tonight.
And I'll leave you with one nugget our friends at Spreadopedia just sent across right now. If you go all the way back to 1978, and I know it's not a huge historical sample size, NFC West teams coming in off a bye on the road playing against NFC East teams, 3-7 against the spread, 2-8 straight up. So it speaks volumes about maybe the struggles of travels and everything else that can factor into the equation. I know 10 games, not exactly a relevant sample size, but fascinating to think it's only happened that few times since 1978. Payne, any parting shots for our loyal listeners as they do some of their last-minute prep, not only for tonight's game, but also looking towards Thursday night and the weekend beyond?
You know, I think one thing, and it kind of does tie back into what we're doing here with this game, is start to vision and start to track bye weeks. I think they're becoming less relevant to what you're doing with your handicapping. You talk about a Seattle team off the bye. They didn't actually get back into the building and doing work until Monday. With the new CBA rules, I think buys are becoming less valuable. So something to keep a look at moving forward.
Definitely great information as always. Thank you very much. Payne Insider, folks, encourage you again, check out his website, PayneInsider.com, or follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. Follow me on Twitter, at Todd Furman, or visit my website, toddstake.com. Best of luck from the Bet the Board podcast crew on this Monday night between Washington and Seattle. And remember, we'll be right back with you on Thursday as we look towards the Thursday night game between the Colts traveling to Reliant Stadium to take on the Texans and preview the busy schedule that is week 6 in the NFL.